Good evening, everybody, and welcome to our slightly less regular, I guess we're a Tuesday stream at the moment.
We are when we are available stream. But most importantly, oh, you've already got the screen.
Sorry.
That's
a spoiler for people.
No one mentioned that they saw that. You didn't see that.
You didn't see that.
Let's start again.
Yes.
Hello!
We're back.
We're
definitely back. We are most certainly and definitely back. It's good to be back. It's always good to be back. But yes, we are indeed back, despite the YouTube back end actually crashing there. Lovely. It seems we are still live though. No, it's fine. You didn't miss anything. You saw nothing. Back to your turnips.
Yes. Aye.
But for those who tune in for the weather, it's been grim. It's been cold. We've had a couple of days of sunshine, but generally it's just kind of been winter's setting in. We don't not really had an autumn.
No, it's just been really cold.
Yeah.
It's awful. And when it's not been cold, it's just been really, really drizzly. Also very full of dinner. So I'll sit here and try not to burp for the next however long we carry this on for. I know we've been very sort of sporadic and not really been around. I've obviously been occasionally on Twitter from time to time and the odd thing on the Telegram getting posted by yourself as well. We're just like really busy with certain kind of stuff, and with the way certain things are going, I think maybe we could even elaborate a bit further during the stream. We don't really see too much of a point of us making a big push or commitment to doing anything at this exact moment. Not to say that things are going to go away. I think we'll be back in a more committed capacity to this stuff at some point. Might possibly be towards the new year. But there is a lot of things changing and a lot of narratives being pivoted on very heavily.
Yes.
And we have really put ourselves out in front of that. In a way that, you know, there are those who are watching who know and are aware of what we have already sort of predicted and the elements of that that are already coming together. I think that will only become more obvious in the coming months. And we may, as you sort of suggested to me the other day, have to possibly like review our own stuff in 18 months' time and do like a retrospective for people of like, here's how we worked out what was going to happen.
Basically, yes. Everything is unfolding as we have foreseen. But as always, we see the future by looking at the past. We're going backwards here, really, somewhat. And we need to look at, really, the current situation not as a shift of the current thing, but more as an outgrowth of the Americanization of the political discourse in Britain and just the political situation in Britain. Politics as an entity, as a form in Britain, has become not just generally Americanized like it was in the 1980s to a degree, in the 1990s, and then Blair and obviously the special relationship in quotes with W and all that. All of that was a creeping Americanization, but it was not specific. We had American version, but British versions of American things. And American things were coming in terms of the zeitgeist and the feeling of politics, but not the specific organizations and people. Really, since about 2015, really, I'd say, we're putting year zero as the Brexit vote, and we'll explain why over the course of the stream.
Yes.
But politics in Britain has changed to not just be generally Americanized, to be specifically Americanized, to the point that large parts of British politics are now merely franchises of American media and political organizations.
Yes. I suppose in the interim period, whilst we get properly started, even though we're a little bit absent at the moment, if you wish to, there are ways that you can support us, either via becoming a channel member on YouTube or doing a super chat or a super sticker or whatever.
Yes.
Or you can subscribe to the Substack, which gets you pretty much all of our recent streams as a podcast, as an alternative to YouTube Premium. And you can also give one-time sort of donations to the Ko-fi link as well, which pretty much takes almost all payment sources.
Yes, we're being more relaxed kind of content-wise, because quite honestly, the news cycle and the political situation is such a mess that we struggle to cut through. And I think if we did any pieces of major work basically between now and the elections in 2024, they would quite simply be ignored. Because like a dog returning to its own vomit, people cannot stay away from the current thing. And that extends into our, sadly, into our own circles as well. But we'd like to explain to you why the current moment looks like it does. Because I don't think people have really grappled with what's happened to UK politics to allow things to be both as the same and as different as they are. Because we've seen a lot of this stuff before, but not in its current form. Someone who is held up as a hero of the right, in quotes, in terms of fight back politics, even against the Tory party, yes, in certain ways. Someone who is highlighted as someone who is too extreme for the mainstream, for the centre-right, is Douglas Murray. We've talked about him before, but we're going to take the first section here to just kind of highlight some of the things that are currently happening.
Yes.
This is Douglas Murray writing for the New York Post, talking about how isolationist Republicans are wrong. We need to stand up for Israel and Ukraine. This was published on the 27th of October, so merely 5 days ago. I put a post out on Twitter on one of the accounts that we use, but it's, we talked about it during our kind of trilogy of streams. We did the Henry Jackson Society, we did Policy Exchange, and then we did a stream called Total Tory Removal, but we mapped out people like Douglas Murray. We mapped out a lot of the types you will now see becoming more prevalent in UK politics.
Yes.
And they are going to become ever more prevalent with the assistance of the US kind of political influencer sphere.
But you were going to make the point here, yeah, that Murray isn't just someone who has for one reason or another on the odd occasion said, you know, geopolitical things because he's just got to say that.
No.
He has actively been a part of what we could refer to as American empire and Israeli political interests for over a decade. And one of the primary sort of sources he came through that was an organization called Just Journalism.
Yes.
Now, Just Journalism, as far as I was aware, was basically run by him in the UK as an office that may as well have been operating under Israeli intelligence.
Well, he was an associate director, yes, of Just Journalism, which is described here by a former Henry Jackson Society member, a think tank that Douglas Murray was part of for a long time, as an Israeli advocacy group. Because it was. It was an Israeli advocacy group. It was correct the record in the UK for Israel. It was countering anti-Israeli news. And from 2011 onwards, really, because the outfit was folded into this think tank we talked about, again, refer to our Henry Jackson Society stream, but this pro-Israeli lobby group was folded into a think tank that was then funded by the UK Home Office and is very closely tied to the UK Conservative Party. Here's Douglas Murray again. Israel is the only country who were never allowed to win a war. British author and journalist attracted extraordinary attention due to his pro-Israel remarks in a recent interview in which Murray formally reaffirmed his criticism of pro-Palestinian perspectives regarding the conflict. Again, this is not a stream about the situation.
No.
For we would never stream about it.
No.
It is not something that is honestly worth talking about. It is, as we've described, a dialectic trap. But here's the New York Post article by Douglas Murray, basically beating the war drums. And Douglas Murray is beating the war drums because he is, and always has been, bought and paid for by an Israeli lobby group,
yes,
that was his foundational into the world of punditry. He started off as a pro-Israel pundit in a pro-Israel, correct the record style outfit. That's where this comes from, and that's why, again, this trilogy of streams that we did, I believe, is so important. But anyway,
and for those in the room who haven't made the obvious connection, the reason why Douglas Murray is allowed to be publicly based,
yes,
he's allowed to say Muslims bad, is because the agitation message of Muslims bad comes with the integration message of Muslims are bad because they disrupt multicultural society and lead to hatred of our favourite ally, the Jews. P.S. Moderate Muslims are good people and you have to respect them as fellow Brits. You know, it is all the framing and almost what you could refer to as like ideological cladding that is pre-attached to him that allows him to then stand up and go, oh, look at what all these Muslim barbarians are doing in London. Isn't that really bad? Look at this mass protest.
Thank you, Sisyphus's dung ball, great name, by the way, for the £6. Unfortunately, the back end of Ko-Fi has messed up what is very obviously your dot art there, but I imagine that maybe
is it,
it may be some sort of
trader, possibly.
I was going to say an item bouncer, but but you've beaten me there. Yes, an item bouncer. Thank you for the £6 there. But we also see a push here from not only Jordan Peterson, but basically everyone who is part of this, what I'm going to just refer to now as the UK neocon sphere.
Yes, I mean, I think one of the more obvious operations they engaged in, and I think we were right on this in the way that we were right with the last one, was the National Conservatism Conference, which we made a few mentions about and definitely made a proper mention about in the Total Tory Removal Stream.
Yes, for those of you...
And it very clearly... It became very obvious to us that the National Conservatism Conference was run by people who are wholly of the establishment. They would have almost no interest in supporting something they thought would be obstinate to their goals and desires.
Yes. For those of you who don't know what this Alliance for Responsible Citizenship is, or ARC is, it's basically the quote-unquote intellectual dark web doing a... We'll just be classical liberal... Globo-homoists.
Oh, yeah.
Will basically just be bought Jordan Peterson writ large.
Yes. The National Conservatism thing that was earlier in the year is very much of a similar framing. It is run by the same people. And furthermore, it was actively advertised to us, yes, which is the important point we want to pick out here. Because in the last 2 or 3 days, this Alliance for Responsible Citizenship thing, which we've heard about before and we've seen here and there,
yes,
has all of a sudden come fully out. That's it. It's on show. It's public. And it's being advertised, I think, to us, as is a lot of this sort of essential kind of bait.
Based bait.
Well, I was going to say, A.A. Morgoth call it the sort of anti-jihad trap.
It is the counter-jihad.
That's the one.
I don't want to turn this into a stream to highlight our work on Substack, because I'm going to do a reading of it, I think, at some point, because it's one of the more relevant things.
Yes.
But I made a piece called Freedom Fries and Coronation Chicken, which basically preempts all of this. Mm. I am so surprised by it. It feels like it was written after all of this flared up rather than before it, but still. What we are seeing is a repetition of the War on Terror era. This is just... the war on terror. It doesn't matter what people are saying. This is just the war on terror.
Yes.
It's a rerun. It's a rerun.
Yeah, seen it.
It's a rerun.
But yes, Jordan Peterson, Alliance for Responsible Citizenship Conference, which I think carries on until tomorrow, possibly.
I'm not even sure.
And of course, all of our favourite people are there. Matt Goodwin's there.
Yes.
That Marxist feminist that writes for Unheard, she's there. My favourite... you know, colour or race-blind presidential candidates there.
Vivek Ramsey, Wayne, Jordan Peterson are the star speakers. It's a UK political event.
It's odd, that, isn't it?
It's very odd, isn't it?
But that will all come to a head in a moment.
We've talked about him before. He's just Matt Goodwin. He'll be pushed to you as a very based person who just spends all this time now saying extremely pro-Israeli things, but very loudly.
I would almost recommend we have a little scroll through some of the replies here, because some of them are choice replies. Oh, look at that at the top.
Oh, we'll go over that in a sec, because we do have the eternal Nige clip, because we don't do the affirmations these days. We let Nige do the affirmation for us.
Yes.
Because it's very important to keep our affirmations going. But yes, we have all of the based right people here who will be pushed to you in due course. All of them very, very heavily clothing themselves in Israel. The ARC stuff is just funny. The conference that's basically the international right, in quotes, as an Israeli lobby group, because they mentioned the events of last week, and we'll go over an article specifically tying all of this together at the end.
Yes.
Because there are people who are coming out saying what we're saying, but from the other angle.
Yes, and they're celebrating it, which is hilarious. But a big part of this as well, and this is something I pointed
out. Well, this is from Laura Dodsworth, who made another one of these weird self-helps, quote-unquote, semi-based books called Free Your Mind. musician. He's very popular on the social medias and is all over lots of kind of Telegraph articles and things like
yes.
that.
But she's mentioning here what was referred to as the October Declaration.
Yes.
I don't know if you're going to play the clip here.
I will actually, I'll turn the desktop audio on and I'll actually play you all the clip here.
Anthony Magnol. Mr. Speaker, after the appalling protests this weekend, will the Prime Minister endorse the October Declaration that so many members of this House have signed and the other place and encourage all people across this country to stand up for British Jews?
Anthony Magnol.
But yes. You know, there is this great declaration. I think we've actually got it linked in the next.
Yes, this is from the British Friends of Israel,
which was all basically started up 2 weeks ago by yes. Toby Young,
yes,
a couple of other free speech union people, and Laura Dodsworth as well, and another woman, Alison Pearson.
Here he is, Tony Young, Toby Young.
There's ex-Henry Jackson member, Emma Webb, there as well, of course.
Director of Common Sense Society. There's basically, this serves as a giant list of all the people who are undertaking this neoconservative
yes,
operation
I
in
want,
the UK.
I want all friends and anons to go to this link, to read through it,
yeah.
and when you see people in our sphere positively or even really engage with any of the people who are signatories of this in any way that doesn't declare them as outright enemies, they must be asked why it is they are doing that. Because this is a clear sign that all the signatories of this, they will not sign some sort of great declaration that, you know, the British people, an ethnic distinct group, have the right to a homeland and a right to feel safe in it. But Jews have a right to feel safe here.
Yes.
And that's their priority.
So the link's actually in the chat there, I believe. I don't know if that's sent properly or not, but the link will be in the description as well if it's if it's not sent properly in the chat. But yes, this is from the British Friends of Israel. It's basically just a very, very boilerplate Pledge of Allegiance is what it is.
Yes.
This is, you can read it yourself, this is a Pledge of Allegiance to Israel. British Jews should not live in fear because of actions taken by the State of Israel to defend herself. The British state must do everything in its power to protect them. We respect the right of all groups. Children have not been spared. 4 Jewish schools in Britain felt compelled to close. No specific threat, they just closed and went, oh, anyway, we don't feel very safe.
Convention.
a public convention.
But, you know, we've got all sorts of people here. We've got Goodwin, Baroness Helena Morrissey, who was at ARC. Who else we got there? There's Nigel Bigger, who's like this totally cool COVID skeptic guy.
Yeah.
David Albufaya. I'm sure he's an interesting ethnic character. Jacob Vince was that chief of the Christian Friends of Israel.
Yes. Alan Mendoza. Yeah.
Alan Mendoza. Yeah. The list goes on quite a ways for this one.
There's lots of obviously Tory MPs on it.
Yes.
This just should show you really, oh god.
Rothschild.
Yeah, Rothschild. It's basically a who's who of the establishment. Oh,
that's good. Dennis Noel Kavanagh, director of the Gay Men's Network, has also signed up for it. They should just have all the folk from the Paedophile Information Exchange on here too.
But there's Parliament lit up in the Israeli flag.
But, you know,
They didn't light up Parliament in the British flag. We got Don't Look Back in Anger.
Yes.
But this is...
Thoughts and prayers.
Anyway, but this is really an outgrowth, though, not to turn it into a current thing stream, of the American obsession with the greatest ally.
Well, yes.
And I have never seen in Britain, like, flag waving of this proportion for a foreign nation since we saw the emergence of the Ukraine crisis.
To a certain extent...
And the two of them have been linked together by Douglas Murray.
Not that it's rare for us to... you know, comment positively about the people of Israel and the people of Judea, because of course we do love them deeply so.
Yes.
But I think they almost had a bit of a sense of reality in the early 2000s, even though this stuff was doing gangbusters in the States, even
yeah.
well on from the 90s, that they didn't do that here. You know, and there was the 7/7 bombing or the attack in Manchester. Even up until... basically this year, I don't remember, as you say, seeing this at all in the UK. There was mentions of anti-Semitism or using it as a framing tool, but such a wide-scale move for them all to go as in one on
yeah.
this is the likes of which we've never seen. And I think we can literally put it all down to the fault of Nigel Farage in 2016 going over America and basically becoming an American political activist.
Somewhat. I will say that we've had a general creep of American politics into our politics for many years. But really, it was the confluence of the Brexit vote and the Trump election and the two things being bundled together in the international narrative that really created the situation we're in here. Brexit vote was supposed to put the UK back into its own footing. It was meant to make sure that it was looking inwards. Instead, it has only helped reveal that as we move further from the EU, we move closer to the American Empire directly. The UK is a client state of global power, and as such, its politics have been globalized to reflect wider, quote-unquote, Western politics, which really just means American politics. For wider context, see our Failure of Brexit article on our Brexit and Sovereignty streams, if you want to seek those out. But the long and short of it is that we ended up with nonsensical protests in the UK for a long time. We had George Floyd protests in the UK, and the biggest and earliest of them were the anti-Trump protests in 2019, and before that as well.
Yes.
But really, 2019 anti-Trump protests are a great synthesis of all of this, in that you have directly American politics on British soil, to a very large extent that it ends up being headline news.
I mean, just think as well of, like, you know, let's go back 10 years to 2013, and you ask the average person on the street, what do you think of someone who goes to a protest?
Yeah.
They're weird crust punks, or they're university students who are too involved in some issue that doesn't matter. Protesting was basically seen as a completely blasé waste of time. And yet, here we are now, 10 years later, and we now have basically a protest culture. Day in, day out, there is sometimes multiple mainstream news stories that are given multiple sort of cycles throughout that 24-hour period. Just Stop Oil, Extinction Rebellion, Turning Point UK, and anti-immigration protests, pro-immigration protests, housing protests, it's become like such a complex of it that it's ridiculous. And I think the only place that we really could have adopted this from
is America.
Yes. Occupy and all that kind of stuff, where it seems to be one of the few places in the world where this stuff was pioneered. I mean, funnily enough, we could maybe say it was truly pioneered in Israel. But once it went from Israel to America, it seems to have come here pretty quickly.
This is American politics. This is American politics writ large, literally, in that we have the quote-unquote protest culture of America foisted upon us, and we even have some of the protests about American events on our own soil.
Yes.
Not protesting American influence in Britain, as happened in the past, but protesting American issues directly as British issues, which is the Americanization of British politics. And it happens a lot of the time willingly. There has been, as I'll go into later, really no resistance from the right wing to any of this process. They've welcomed it.
Because every single time the quote-unquote American elements that come into our politics pander to based, pander to anti-woke, but also at the same time they pander to Zionism and the establishment.
Well, like I said, really the start of this in the UK, the start of this intensification of politicization, not just in terms of UK issues, but in terms of global issues, was the Brexit vote. To the point that by 2019, you have people like JobSite putting out articles here saying, you know, just under half of the UK, 46% workers say they've noticed increasingly politicised workspaces, issues driving the rise of political conversations of Brexit, up 46%, President Donald Trump up 36%, and the leadership of the Conservative Party up 32%. Two-thirds say they're comfortable discussing the turbulent topic of the new Prime Minister Boris Johnson with colleagues. However, Brexit remains a boarded off topic for one in four. So 25% of people didn't feel comfortable talking about Brexit because it was, quote-unquote, such a controversial issue. But what we see here is the further, like I said, just the further politicization of British life. British British politics really has never been less about Britain itself. What we see here is a politics that is globalized. Meanwhile, this politics, is more present day-to-day in our interactions. They are being politicized by a globalized form of politics, detached from their communities and their everyday lives. This is the 1-2 punch here, is that you have globalized politics and you have ever more politics in people's lives. And who is responsible for this?
Their
smartphone, our old nemesis again. It's always their smartphone. But really, we must, as we've talked about before, think about the influence of technology. Technology is the only way that this new ultra-globalized, ultra-divisive politics can take hold in people's everyday lives. This, the quote-unquote culture war, did not exist in Britain pre-2014. And if it did, it was in extremely small-scale places or a very different form. A lot of people have welcomed the culture war. In fact, a lot of people in our sphere still will tell you to welcome the culture war, and that winning the culture war is the path to victory. And but as we know, it is nothing but ruination.
I mean, I just want to take a step back, you know, from this as well. Let us consider all the people that have sprung up since 2016 who exclusively talk about culture war events. Had there not been this handshake, and I'm just going to say it again, between basically Donald Trump and Nigel Farage and whatever organisations were backing those two figures, that wouldn't have been brought here. There would be no Darren Grimes. There would be no GB News.
Well, we're getting to that.
There'd be a whole lot of things that there just wouldn't be. And we could say that this is an example of you're about to go on to see.
The Americanization of British politics is something that only the left is allowed to talk about. And it's bemoaned that this Americanization is a defeat of leftism. This is an attempt to do the other half of the narrative, which is to bolster those of the global right as some form of far right and further push the quote-unquote center-right into the ever-shifting managerial neutral position.
Well, this is why I was going to suggest that the existence of all of these things is evidence of the fact that the right in Britain has not pushed against this or gone to the side of it. It has welcomed it.
Yes.
And it has, in a certain sense, thrived under it.
From a revenue point of view, I would say yes. It has thrived in it in that people's bank balances have swollen. I talked about that during my stuff on like barking at headlines and all that.
Mm.
In which all of these effectively new neocons have become like the house Negroes of the regime. They are just yucking and jiving for it. And this is from the Guardian, this is from 2022. The new right is Trump's toxic legacy and it could shape the future of British politics. This is just them saying what we're saying, but almost in a way that tries to encourage the right to embrace it. This authoritarian worldview is gaining momentum in America. What's to stop its ideas taking seed in the UK? And it's just a lot of alarmism about what is effectively like Dan Crenshaw style.
J.D. Vance.
J.D. Ooh. Vance and Dan Crenshaw say we need to bomb for Israel. That's what this is bemoaning. It's dressing up American neoconservatism as effectively cool, in quotes, far rightism.
Do you want to be the villain? Because these guys are the villains.
Yes.
Ooh.
There's also an undercurrent as well here that leftist propaganda does double duty, in that when it's not accompanied by decisive action via the state, it acts to signal to the right, or in this case, the new right, about who their figurehead should be. The regime knows about the Streisand effect and knows a good amount of people will simply invert enemy propaganda to internalize it. It allows establishment media to cooperate when it is supposedly in different political camps. You have the quote-unquote right-wing media bolstering someone like Jordan Peterson, and then you have the left-wing media like Jacobin here bolstering someone like Jordan Peterson, but by wagging their finger at him.
Yes.
It's amazing, isn't it, that all of these hit pieces can come out about Jordan Peterson, but he never suffers apart from by his own hand.
No.
And by his own hand, I mean the hand that holds the benzos.
I mean, as a slight aside here as well, I would wonder, in this case where, you know, they prototyped this kind of thing with Jordan Peterson in 2014, 2015 in America, yeah. And then they've done even more radical versions of it, and you could essentially argue that someone like Fuentes is an even more extreme example of this villain archetype you might follow. I wonder if that follows then here, that someone like a Mark Collett or some new person comes out of the blue who's like this weird ethnic internet sperg,
yes,
but who also somehow manages to harass mainstream British politicians.
Well, it's classic kayfabe. There's faces and heels for each side to codify. Hence the current crop of right-wing professional victims, such as someone like Calvin Robinson, yes, or even someone like Gavin McGuinness is kind of a US example of that. Mm-hmm. We talked about it years ago at this point, maybe 18 months ago, when we talked about the victim narratives of the online right and the based ball pits.
James Lindsay and all his kind of nonsense.
James Lindsay and all of the intellectual dark web people, all of that is the based ball pit. It is the left going, Jordan Peterson is a Nazi, and you should listen to him.
Mm.
If you're right, if you don't like us, you should like Jordan Peterson. And they know. They know it does that, because there are certain people they simply will not talk about. And there are certain issues they simply will not talk about. When regime media wants something not to be paid attention to, it doesn't shout at it. It ignores it.
As a final point you've put here, this allows establishment media to cooperate with both sides of the political camps, even though it theory exists either neutrally or is completely opposite of the one it's, you know, actually garnering support for.
There's a very obvious point here, in that in the UK, GB News is the centrepiece of this operation, explicitly sold as Fox News for the UK. And of course, Nigel Farage is their star player. It serves the same aim as Fox News, which is to appear dissident and then push the hawkish establishment line as hard as possible. Here I want to talk about Farage for a little bit, but first let us hear his affirmation one more time.
You may think it's complicated, but be clear. A sovereign state of Israel has been attacked. War has broken out. For decency, we must stand 100% with Israel.
Thanks for clearing that up there, Nige. But Nigel Farage and Brexit and UKIP in general was, I think, one of the wedges that created the direct Americanization, in the way that we can have outfits like Turning Point UK,
yes,
in Britain, to the point that we can have Jordan Peterson and Vivek Ramsey-Way as the headline members of a British political conference, in quotes.
At which Michael Gove and other MPs are speaking at.
Yes, he really was the figure who created this, because what he did was, in creating a single issue environment with Brexit and then collapsing the whole thing on his way out to become an American political pundit, he set the political conversation in Britain as an internationalist and not as a nationalist one.
Yes.
UKIP was an internationalist party. It never had a national platform, and that is deliberate.
Yes.
It never had policies.
I think as well we can make a subtle point here that I've tried to make time and time again with lots of things, and that there could have been 99% of people in UKIP who did genuinely believe in a cause of British nationalism, British sovereignty for British people who are white and born here. However, if the man at the top or the men at the top have interests otherwise, all that genuine energy will be sucked up and used for some other purpose. And as you say, that purpose ended up being throwing Britain into the hot coals of what was and still is dealing with international law, remits and obligations and all these sort of things that we'll never get out of. It'll never be fixed. And we can thank Nigel Farage for that. And at the same time, we can also thank him for welcoming in, as you say, Turning Point UK and the culture war. And I think we could argue that even specific issues like the entire TERF v trans thing
is
an aspect of this singular event almost.
Yeah, he is partly responsible for the push of American culture war and the latter anti-woke organisations.
and their money and talking points from 2015 onwards. This would have been impossible without Brexit, a 24-hour news bonanza that brought the circus of American 51% versus 49% political paralysis to Britain. This replaced the old-style, quote-unquote, consensus government of the Cameron compassionate conservatism years that was too boring to politicise people effectively and served as a holding pattern to keep British politics in a malaise post 2008.
And you're right, it's such a contrast. The Cameron government went out of its way to be boring.
Yes.
And knowing what we know now and what we will continue to learn, much of what Nigel Farage got up to and is still getting up to now is probably not planned in his own independent office, but is planned in the same offices where all Tory policies planned.
Yes.
So we can further consider the fact that the Tory party has maybe even made use of Nigel Farage as the sort of vanguard for Americanizing and giving their own politics theatre.
Yes, as you said there, Johnny Ripplesey, the culture war did come through the internet, but really, Nigel Farage is the bridge. He has one foot as basically a quote-unquote right-wing e-celeb, one foot as a political pundit, and basically his arms outstretched into trying to be a relevant politician, in quotes, in both America and now latterly in Britain, kind of reaching back and forth with both feet in these different worlds and acting as a bridge to bring all of these narratives from the online world into the mainstream. That it is the kind of 2015-izing of the world. It is the Trumpizing of the world. Not in like a liberals, you know, I'm mad at the orange man way, but in a 24-hour punditry way.
Yes. What are the left mad about now? You know, what have they gone? What have they lost their marbles over? Which woke types have been BTFO'd? What are the Muslims saying now? Who's offending the Jews?
If you want to, as we've said before, you can make this stuff your entire day.
Yep.
And the Boris Johnson drama, there's always something with Boris Johnson or Nigel Farage or any of these people to keep you immersed in this cycle and that deliberate. And this reached its height in 2019 with the Save Brexit election.
Yes.
And a presidential-style push around the personality of Boris Johnson, a prime minister who oversaw and facilitated the largest wave of immigration in UK history and the COVID lockdowns.
And net zero.
But, yeah, I will say those of you who were duped into voting for based Boris Tory party gave away your agency via the ritual humiliation of the ballot box. You were too stupid, quite frankly, to look back at the previous decade of Tory politics and say, never again. And they will do this. Like, think about how uncontroversial it was in alternative political spheres, in quotes, to tell someone to vote for Boris Johnson in 2019. Mm. And yet the results. And yet the previous decade of Tory rule and his record of being a pro-immigration amnesty London mayor. I pointed this out at the time. I was exasperated by it. But you will simply be overwhelmed by a based Nige, based Boris narrative, and then you will get unlimited immigrants. Total Tory removal. We will speak about both Nigel Farage and GB News each turn in later streams, but joining him on the UK Neocon Network is none other than Boris Johnson himself.
And have you seen the theatre they've engaged in with this as well, as they had Neil Oliver give this finger-wagging, disparaging talk about Boris Johnson being a globalist and he's aligned with the World Economic Forum.
Yeah.
And then announced, I believe, he's going to leave GB News because he can't stand to be there now that Boris Johnson's part of it. So is he going to go, is it going to be like him and Dan Wooten and Calvin Robinson going to start like GB News Plus or UK News?
It already exists. It's called the Lotus Eaters.
Oh, see, this is the part I'm wondering whether or not we get into. Because those who paid attention to the traditional Britain Group conference a few weeks ago.
We did it, Scrump. We kept Corbyn out.
Woo, yeah! But no. Those who were aware of the traditional Britain Group conference Those who I believe also recently saw a segment that may or may have not been on Lotus Eaters. I'm waiting for the speech from Sargon himself to come out. But to quote his own words, essentially, Nigel Farage is going to use his pressure to reform the Tory party after it loses dramatically in the next election, and we're all going to join it and save it and reform it. Now, for those who actually watch our stuff to any great degree, I shouldn't have to add any more to that, really. It should be obvious straight away that why that's like such a problem and why it goes against everything we have said, especially in the last 12 months. And also, quite frankly, I might as well suggest it now, is that we've known that was going to happen for months at this time.
We've been so cranky.
Yes, we've been trying to point out to people, quite frankly, that Carl and what he's doing at Lotus Eaters does not back us. It does not back what we want. It primarily serves no purpose other than making Tory talking points look cool.
Yes.
And that can be the only explanation I can come up with as to the bizarre guest list that they still continually accrue.
I will not join the Tory party. Anyone, no. Like, going around and telling people to take over the Tory party is incredibly beyond the pale, in my opinion.
I mean, I don't think it really needs to be expressed too much, but we all saw what happened to the young, energised radicals that joined the Labour Party.
Yes.
They were there, they made the organisation useless, and then they served as the cannon fodder for Keir Starmer's rise to power.
There's two outcomes for it. We've also seen what happens when you do actually take over a political organisation, as would happen with UKIP, as in it is detonated.
But the Tory party is not going to self-destruct. That's not going to happen, because it can't.
The thing is, it can and just be replaced by something identical to it. That would be the whole thing. Well, we're the new Tory party. You're the old Tory party. It's very New Labour, because that's what New Labour did, basically. Tony Blair basically dissolved the old Labour Party and formed a new one in his own image. And that's how they were routed that time. But there's two options. Either you fail to take over and they survive you, or they detonate your organisation. It's a complete non-starter. Oh, dear.
Is somebody taking a piss in the chat? Oh no, they're going to find out your real name. Oh no!
Oh no, what? Anyway, to get on with the stream, they're even invoking some of the Ofcom stuff we talked about. Again, this is why we streamed about Ofcom, you know, we did two dedicated streams on Ofcom because of this confluence coming with Boris Johnson and GB News.
Well, let's step back for a moment and think about this in terms of a timeline. Tony Blair and his mates come up with the idea for Ofcom.
Yeah.
They launch it in a very bare bones format with powers that they can come in and laterally rewrite if they ever come back into power. The Tory party gets a hold of it. David Cameron says he's going to get rid of it. The Tory government then spends another 13 years giving Ofcom new powers almost weekly, and also at the same time set up a massive media organisation through ARC and Legatum called GB News. Now, why would one end of the Tory party set up a media regulation outfit that would destroy the party's own media outlet? What would be the point in that?
I know. It seems to be a bit odd, but yes. The Boris Johnson joining GB News is such, like, they're winking at us.
Mm.
They're facing the camera, and they're winking at us.
Yes.
This is them going, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, we're doing the Neocon Network, and we're going to have a perpetual war about where the furthest edge of acceptable right-wingism is with Ofcom. And it will be a massive process. We'll have Nigel Farage and Boris Johnson going, woo, we've done it. We've taken over the Tory party, guys. You should join the Tory party. And it's going to be awful. All of this is going to be awful. But where it has come from is an Americanization of British politics to the point that we now have a photocopied neoconservative movement.
Yes, I mean, and the statements we made earlier on about the Lotus Eaters and Carl, this is something that we do not want to create the drama or animosity about. But this has become so blatant that we can't not mention it. Everyone sees this. Everyone knows it's going on. There just needs to be enough people to basically stand up and ask the man, what the fuck are you doing?
I cannot, in all good conscience, think of anyone telling you at this point, even as a quote-unquote takeover operation, to join the Conservative Party. It is... I've not heard you, something like, so stupid.
You got to go and fight, like, as we will find out, the Legatum Institute and its foundation and the Marshall Wace Foundation and a couple of billion pounds between each. You want to go to war with that, do you?
Yeah.
I don't think that goes well.
No, neither do I. But anyway, like I said, Farage, for his part, shut down his party at the height of their momentum and buggered off to suckle on the teat of the American Empire. He just went off to be a political figure in a bigger political space,
yep.
Which was the American election at the time, which was the big political thing. And he has been attaching himself to current things on various quote-unquote sides ever since. Cue the pan banging, but we shall quickly move on. Everything now must be seen through an American political lens. All UK politics must now move through some sort of American sieve. This is from Yahoo News Today, I believe. COVID inquiry live. Boris Johnson's pandemic response was Trump-level mad and dangerous.
Yeah, and how many times a week do we get a thumbnail like that?
Yeah.
You know, this is DeSantis-esque.
Yeah.
This is Trump-level. They're going mad like American patriots. You know, these are all ideas that would have been very secondary to anything that was happening in Britain. But now that they, as you say, it's the primary lens through which we have to see Partygate or whatever other event we're supposed to care about in that moment.
To the point that one of the largest, quote-unquote, anti-woke presences on, like, UK political Twitter is just an outpost of an American neocon organization.
Mm.
Have people just forgotten that Turning Point USA and Charlie Kirk are rampant neocons?
Or Dennis Prager?
Yes.
Or any of that kind of stuff? Have the fact that there's a big PragerU presence over here, or Students for Liberty, or Reason, or Reasoned, or all these different quote-unquote libertarian free market think tanks. Even bloody... parts of the London School of Economics and other groups like the Adam Smith Institute, which are by no means our friends, but even they have become these institutions which no longer appeal to the old tradition of English economics they were in for hundreds of years. They are now institutions that fight against woke.
Yeah.
And against this American idea of liberal socialism.
Yeah.
Liberals. We need like the... Oh, God, who's the guy with the big cheeks, the big jowly guy?
But no, this is, again, you have Turning Point UK engaging in a internationalist political battle. It's basically like the Indians and Pakistanis versus each other on the streets of Leicester, except people are taking sides.
Yep.
This is very much like the Henry Jackson Society. We need to protect Indian nationalists. Or that clip of Nigel Farage on GB News nodding along to that Indian, saying the Indian people and their conflicts have literally, I think he uses the phrase at some point, enriched British society.
Well, yes, the problem isn't that we've imported millions of people from different nations and faiths that have, you know, blood feuds between them. It's that British society isn't malleable, transparent, or easily enough trodden on to make their ethnic animosity disappear in a moment.
No. It's great that an outfit called Turning Point UK, its main concern is that Jewish or Israeli people on the tube would not feel safe.
Yes.
Due to an international conflict.
Well, I mean, I might actually, before we get to the last article here, seeing as we've got a bit of time, we're going to quickly look up a Constantine Kissin one. Because
there was
one of those the other day that was so egregious, I'm not even sure I can really react to it. I might have to just read it as wrote. Give me a second.
Well, there's a few other points I want to bring up as well. As we get to this, kind of the big capping off point, which is an article here from Conservative Home, which involves a lot of the people we've talked about before, a lot of the big money people in the Tory party, and a lot of the quote-unquote alternative influencers. And you have an article here from, this is Danny Kruger MP. Danny Kruger, the conference taking place this week that can help revive the West, and with it, our party's fortunes. So here we have a Conservative MP saying Jordan Peterson's internationalist politics, I don't have it up right now, but him getting mad at being called Juden Peterstein was quite funny. Bedeviled egg. Use your real name. I think if you don't know that Jordan Peterson is like a benzo-fueled freak, but, you would like actually grind your children up for the IDF. But why, I don't think there isn't a point there.
Why the fuck are there British MPs pretending to be like trendy, hip, cultural renegades who are appealing to Jordan Peterson, a man who's already 5 years past it?
I'll tell you what this is. This is actually what it would look like if Trump said Gamergate.
Yes.
This is what Trump saying Gamergate would look like. This is exactly what it would look like, and I hate it.
I mean, I know I feel this way. I know you're getting this way as well. Yeah. I know from his tweets the other day that AE is very much like this. I actually hate these people more than most of the far left.
Yes.
Because they have power. They have resources. And a lot of them aren't just the useful idiots. They are the people somewhat near the levers of power.
Yes.
And what do they choose to do with those opportunities? They do this.
Infinite Muslims, but also support for Israel, yes.
Yes.
Our party's in deep trouble. The cause isn't bad policy or scandals, though we've had some of both. It is not our personality, it is not our philosophy. We haven't done anything wrong, guys.
We have good people at the top, and fundamentally, we have the right ideas. The reason we are in trouble is our failure over many years to address the profound faults in the Western economic, cultural, and political models, faults which afflict the UK perhaps more than any country.
Global politics.
Wouldn't that indicate that you might have the wrong idea?
13 years of Tory rule.
The faults are well known and should be particularly apparent to Conservatives. 20 years of cheap money, lowest interest rates and quantitative easing, cheap labour and cheap imports have created a zombie economy. What about the demographic change?
Yeah.
What about every single effort to make sure that our culture cannot be vitalistic?
But Danny Kruger, your party's been in power for 13 years. Surely these are the failings of the Tory party.
Well, you see, he's a Marxist. He believes in the determinism of the free market.
Yes. I'll get over the preamble here. We have 5 million working age births.
Why is it all about economics?
Yeah. A crisis of facility. He's just hitting a lot of high points. Crisis of facility, capitalism, Second World War, public spending. Meanwhile, our culture is eating itself.
The culture war matters enormously.
Here we go, yes. And it's not a sideshow. Too many conservatives think the culture war is beneath them, an obsession of rival fanatics, and that real business of politics is steady management of the ship of state. Yes, real politics is steady management of the ship of state. You know who was seen to be doing that? Tony Blair.
Yeah.
That's why people didn't reject him outright because of the Iraq war. That's why he won an election subsequently, because they saw him as somebody who had steady management of the ship of state.
But that doesn't matter.
Yes.
The culture war matters enormously. Yes. For the objective of the ultra-liberals, the destination the wind is pushing us to is nothing less than the dismantling of Western civilization. But the repudiation of our common inheritance and the attempted creation of a new, more modern model in its place, says a man who works for the same organisation as Rakib Eshan.
I'm going to say, yeah, but surely all of this, though, the wind, what wind? You are the UK government. Where is this prevailing wind coming from? And how can Britain, as a post-Brexit nation, not resist this prevailing wind? After 13 years of your party in power, all of this is such abject lies. But this is what people are telling you to sign up to. These are the people who are being stood next to. These are the people who are being allowed on your alternative platforms. These are the guest list of the Lotus Eaters.
Yeah.
Welcome to your new overlords. No, I will not join the Tory party, Carl. You fucking retard. I will not
join the Tory party. Do not go around telling people to join the Tory. I will actually come down to Swindon and I will shake some sense into you. I will not join the Tory party.
I'm afraid he's not in the room. it's everyone's ears blown out.
I wanted to get that out of the way. I will not join the Tory party.
No, but what you've got to do is spend £1,000 going to Jordan Peterson and his friend's philo-Semitic conference, and then you can save the West.
Yes. I would rather rack back and forth than say, I would rather rack back and forth saying, I hate the Antichrist. It is more useful than trying to found a media empire that does nothing but promote the Tory party. Anyway. The upshot of all of this is that he's talking about the fact that the internationalisation...
Yeah, the UK has a tremendous role to play here. We may be one of the worst afflicted by the economic and cultural mistakes of the 21st century. We also have the most to offer and the most to gain from these times. The 2016 Brexit vote and the 2019 election were a great cry for change. The public want a better, more productive and dignified economy, and a politics and a public culture which honours their values. Conservatives have the ideology and the instincts which can create these things, whereas Labour can only accelerate the journey to disaster. As ERC shows, the ideas are there for a revival of the West, and it is with our party's fortunes. For the sake of both, we need to get on with it.
Jordan Peterson, Nigel Farage and Boris Johnson are going to save the West using Vivek Bamsiway, or whatever his name is, and they're going to do it using classical liberalism.
Yes.
It's okay, guys. We've done it. We've secured a 2% drop in immigration.
Do you mind quickly grabbing the link up at the general bit of the Discord?
Why would I have the Discord open? sure, I can grab that link here. Let me.
But yeah, this is to be fair the one that stood out to me, and I think if you can truly begin to understand how this has become, you know, post woke is now.
Yeah,
woke is over.
Yes,
you know, we will never in any. I don't think we've really done it anyway in the last while. Forever and ever and always, woke would be referred to as a process that has happened.
Yes.
It's over. And if we read the two excerpts here from Mr. Constant Kisson, one of the keynote speakers at the ARC, of course.
Yes. From the Trigonometry podcast. But yes, one of the key speakers at the ARC conference.
And he's talking about Hamas and Israel here. The events of the last 2 weeks have shattered the illusion that wokeness is about protecting victims and standing for persecuted minorities. This ideology is, and has always been, about the one thing many of us have told you about it for years. Power. No, you didn't, you lying prick. You said it was about values. And after the last 2 weeks, there could be no doubt about how these people will use any power they see. They will seek to destroy in any way they can those who disagree. We go on to the next bit there. What we have witnessed over the last 2 weeks, with enormous pro-Hamas rallies in cities like London, Paris and Washington DC, has the potential to change the immigration debate in a decisive way. It is much harder to pretend that allowing people to enter our country illegally is a moral good when you watch some of them celebrate mass murder in the streets of your capital cities. What about the grooming gangs, you dirty, slimy fucking cunt?
It is. It's the what we've ultimately reached here with this neoconservatism is a reflection of the politics of post 9/11. It is making the world safe for democracy.
Oh, no, making the world safe democracy.
Yeah, it is making the world safe for Israel, and that you can only talk about your domestic problems through the lens of Israel. I saw people going around and being like, lean on it, use it, it's a crowbar point. It's like, no, making your domestic politics about Israel feeling safe is the death of your domestic politics. But everyone's just, oh, why tactically can't we just use this? Because it will kill your movement. It will kill you dead. You will go from an organization talking about British issues and British values to simply another flag
waver of Israel. And that's what all of this is.
Well, and a narrative sense as well, think. Woke won't even go down in the name of the trans kids or the anti-whiteism or anything that even as manufactured a debate as it was at least real.
Yes.
And at least happened here in theory. But no, wokeism will actually die because it committed the one cardinal sin, did not prioritise the protection of Jews.
I'm so angry because I have at points thought about making jokes about them using, like, it's been clear, I know AA talked about it, about the whole David Baddiel Jews don't count thing that they're trying
we
to make.
We did the Infinite Small Hat Paradox stream, which is very prescient on this issue.
Go look out our Infinite Small Hat Paradox stream where we talk about the fact that anti-Semitism, even 5 years ago, was trying to gazump itself to jump the queue and become the top of the progressive stack, in quotes. But I wish I'd put down somewhere, yes, they're going to put woke away using Israel, because they are.
I mean, I thought it was going to be the TERFs and the black civil rights activists, but it turns out what they do is they get the TERFs and the black civil rights activists to march in lockstep with Israel.
Yes. It's amazing, isn't it, that all the, you know, Maya Forrester signed that October declaration about protecting Israel. All of these new right people, all of these based feminists, basically all the anti-woke people we talked about, an anti-woke in a post-woke world, it turns out they're just going to use the tried and true vector of the greatest ally.
Mm-hmm.
And I honestly thought that was too unsubtle. I thought that was too hackneyed.
Yes.
I thought sitting there going, yes, they'll put the woke away using Israel is a bit kind of put your dick away. It's a little bit much, but here we are. I should always think about the maximalist position. The maximalist position
yes.
is woke people are anti-Israel.
Blair, in a roundabout way, said it for us. Things can only get worse.
Well, that's enough of that.
I mean, there's really no other moral to the stream this evening, really, other than us. I mean, in a little sense, doing a little bit of a we were right kind of thing, but also because kind of at the moment there's nothing to stream about, and anything we would do that would be interesting would be swamped by current events and the need to feed at the news trough.
Yes.
So instead, what we will do is use what has happened in the last couple of weeks to demonstrate something that we've banged on about for nearly a year at this point now, which is that all the people around us who we are told to be friendly with are the abject enemy. People who take money from or work with the Tory party or its wider organisations must be excised.
Yes. I will not shake hands with the Tory. I will not join the Tory party. It's as simple as that. And if anyone tells you to do either of those things, they are your enemy. Anyway, I'll leave you in the capable hands of our furry friend here.
The cot.
Have a good evening, guys. Don't get too blackpilled, and good night.
Make sure to go to the pub this weekend.
Yes.
Good night.